This morning, or today, a delegation of seven South African officials will meet with UK scientists to discuss South Africa's continued inclusion on the UK's COVID red list for travel. This was according to the Sunday Times yesterday. Now, the team from South Africa includes scientists, diplomats, members of the Ministerial Advisory Committee. They'll meet virtually to allay concerns that the beta variant of COVID-19 is still circulating in South Africa. That was the primary reason that the British government had given for continuing to place South Africa on its red list. Local experts have raised their concerns, saying that this is not based on any scientific merit. The ramifications of this decision, of course, has a huge impact on South Africa's tourism. Between 9 and 11% of South Africa's economy comes from tourism. 1.4 million people in this sector. And every year there are about 44,000 British tourists who come to South Africa. It's our biggest single source market. Now, there have been lobbies on this side of the world and in the UK to try and get South Africa off the red list. Among them being, adding some voice to reason, is Duncan Craig. He's the travel editor for The Times in the UK. Duncan, thanks so much for coming on to the Morning Review this morning. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
In your latest piece in The Times, you've argued strongly that South Africa is one of those countries that should come off the red list. Why do you believe so?
Yes, I mean, I think the first thing to say is obviously applying a sort of scattergun criticism to a government trying to cope with something as off the scale as a global pandemic is obviously, not the way forward. It's tough. No one's saying it's easy. But I think what we found, having covered this very closely over the last 18 months, is that increasingly the justification for some of these decisions about which countries appear on which of these lists, it just seems to be moving further and further away from logic. And it feels like there's at least the perception of some sort of subjectivity being applied. Mm. I mean, the way that the government have been assessing countries is via various metrics that feed in. It comes from the Joint Biosecurity Service, which feeds into the government. But we don't know, and this is a source of frustration, we just don't know how they weight those various figures. So one might be, say, the vaccination rates, one might be infection rates, one might be the ability to sequence positive cases. All of these things feed in, but then there's a sort of thumbs up or a thumbs down approach. And we've just been asking for a little bit more transparency because, as you say, the ramifications are just so huge. Mm.
There's been lots of pointed questions that have been asked, noting that the majority of the countries on this red list are majority countries where we have black and brown people, and people are asking what are some of the systemic, if not racist, connotations to this particular red list. Is this a conversation that has come up in the UK?
No, absolutely not. I don't think this breaks down on race grounds. I just think there's a lack of logic across the board, really. I mean, I was studying the latest figures yesterday, but let's just give some examples. So on Saturday, the UK had just over 30,000 new cases, second only to the US worldwide. South Africa had 1,364. It was 36th on that list. South Africa has half as many critically ill as in the UK, around about 500 to 1,000. Yes, the vaccination rates are very, very different. I concede that. The UK, I think we're up to about 82% of over 16s have had two doses. I think South Africa is, you'll help me out, I think it's nearer 14%, something like that have had both doses of a vaccine. But here's my point. You look at various countries that have been readmitted to the travel fold, i.e. they've been taken off that red list. And there's various there with vaccination rates even lower. So Pakistan, 12%, Bangladesh, 10%, Jamaica, which has been on our amber list for some time, 7.5%. And Egypt, which was one of the ones that came back on in the latest review back on September 17th, that's just 5%. So that, as I say, gives you this sense of, well, what's going on? And And if there are some factors here that we don't know about, then great, be transparent about that. And all the operators and all the tourist businesses that I've spoken to, I think all the travelers themselves as well, would take that on the chin and they'd go, okay, you know, your job is to protect public health here and you've identified something that is of concern. So let's be cautious. But the problem is without that information, everyone's just left to stew and they're just looking at it and scratching their heads.
44,000 British tourists in any other good year come to South Africa on an annual basis. Is there an appetite from British tourists for a long-haul flight? And let's not forget that South Africa is a 12-hour, 11-hour direct flight from London Heathrow to Johannesburg or Cape Town. Is there an appetite from British tourists to go on a long-haul flight to the southern tip of Africa at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd question your figures there. I think it's far greater. I think you've missed a zero off there. I think we're up to 400,000 odd UK visitors come across in a typical year. It's a massive market for us in terms of tourism. It's a massive VFR market as well, visiting friends and relatives, as we call it. And yes, in terms of the appetite for long haul, absolutely. I think the thing that, you know, that I found I've got South African family, I've made numerous trips over the years. The thing I've found about South Africa is it's far more accessible than the distance suggests, given the lack of time zone changes. So what are you? I think you're an hour ahead currently than us. You know, you can fly overnight, you arrive, barely any jet lag, and off you go. And it makes it very, very accessible. And I think the British public just want a sense now. They're looking around, they're seeing a lot of countries that are traveling to a lot of destinations. Yes, there's testing, yes, there's restrictions, but it is possible. And yet we're encumbered with this red list, which is making travel to great swathes of the globe almost impossible, given the punitive cost of quarantine hotels when you come back. And I think a lot of British tourists are just saying, look, let us make our own mind up here. You know, we've reached the stage of personal responsibility around the pandemic. And we want a sense really of just a stop go. If a country will have us, great, we'll go. And then let's use testing to pick up the slack as we come back, rather than just blacklisting entire countries, or in the case of South America, it's near entire continents.
What you're seeing is the South African lobby doing that side. I know that tourist industries, SATSA, have been making a very strong case in the UK. Brand South Africa has also been doing strong internal lobbies there in the UK. What are you seeing? And are you happy with the pitches that are coming from South African political as well as tourism lobbies for South Africa to get off the red list?
Yes, I think so. I mean, there's a limit to what you can do, isn't there? And I think SATSA and all the different organizations now are doing their absolute utmost. What we found throughout the pandemic, and this is understandable as well, the government has a lot in its in tray, shall we say. So there's a lot of things that it's juggling, but I think it does seem to me that the voice that shouts the loudest is the one that gets heard. We're at that sort of stage of this. So I think keeping up that pressure, keeping up the lobbying is the way to go. I think just using cold, hard logic as well. You know, look at the stats, look at the figures here and tell us where we're going wrong and we will address them if we need to. But if we're not going wrong anywhere, then please take us off the red list. So, you know, the petition that's going around is gathering steam. I understand last time I checked that, I think we're up to about 40,000 people had signed that. That's a petition to Parliament. If it reaches the threshold of 100,000 people, then that is something that can be considered in Parliament. Obviously, that's a sort of slow burn situation. But I think Brand SA, SATSA, journalists such as myself, just, you know, we don't have any particular vested interest here. We just want to see logic applied. Because as you say, it's just so destructive on so many different ways. And, you know, tourism is just one element here, isn't it? It's, you know, hugely destructive to the tourist industry in South Africa. Mm-hmm. It's hugely destructive to those businesses and holiday companies that provide trips in a normal year to South Africa, who don't know whether they're coming or going. They're having to defer bookings and defer bookings. And eventually, you know, punters, even the most loyal ones, are just pulling out. And then, of course, you've got all sorts of issues with recouping those costs. So that's forcing tourism companies under this side. I know that's happening in South Africa as well. There's the knock-ons in terms of conservation as well. And I just feel that the visiting friends and family element is being underplayed here. My understanding is that the decision around, say, a country like Pakistan or India, that is weighted in there. There's a huge diaspora of, South Africans over here and Brits in South Africa. And I would just like to see that used in the decision making a little bit better, because families being kept apart is obviously not what we want to see. And I just feel like we've reached a tipping point now in terms of public opinion on this, and hopefully we can push it forward.
Duncan, when is the next red list announcement expected, or could this announcement be made on an ad hoc basis if South African tourist and diplomatic officials can put forward a case to the UK government?
Yeah, really good question. And actually what we found was after the last announcement, which was the big one that we were waiting for, was the Friday, the September the 17th one. There was a big expectation there that the red list would be shrunk from, I think it was around about 60 when that day started, to, 10, maybe, just a third of that, possibly 20, just the really high risk countries that everyone was in agreement about that we shouldn't be visiting. However, all that we end up losing, I think, was we took 8 off that list. And part of the torment now, and certainly when I wrote the piece that I wrote last week, was that there wasn't any clarity around what was going to happen from here on in. We've had these various traffic light reviews, which have followed a sort of 3-weekly cycle. There have also been some key moments, which are called checkpoints. And this one was a sort of combination of the two, where it was the three weekly traffic light review and the checkpoint rolled into one, with hopefully a big overhaul of the system. But the overhaul we got was a little bit lukewarm. And as I say, a lot of those countries stayed on, including South Africa. Since then, we've had clarity that, yes, the traffic light review system on a 3-weekly basis will continue. But, for much of last week, there was an indication from some businesses and travel companies I was speaking to that maybe this wouldn't be decided again until early 2022. So you had a system where you're trying to sell holidays to South Africa, and there's so much uncertainty where already there's so much uncertainty in the market, and deeply destructive. So, yeah, where are we? September the 17th. So we're looking really sort of middle of October or early October, and we'll be waiting for the next review. And the hope is, with all the lobbying and all the hard logic that's being thrown at the government, that South Africa will be one of those that gets the right nod.
In terms of vaccine certification, Duncan, there has been one of the reasons that were put forward by the UK government was also about the efficacy of vaccines administered in countries like South Africa. What is the discussion when it comes to vaccine certificates for people traveling either to the UK, and what are you expecting, or what would you like to see in terms of a South African government asking for some sort of vaccine certification?
Yeah, I mean, I think we just need some clarity on that. And it's part of the latest review. What we found was that a whole number of countries, their vaccine campaigns were recognised. So the vaccines that they were giving their populations were, I think belatedly, but recognised by the UK government, which enabled that process of travel to begin. Because obviously the red list, the traffic lights, it's a moot point, isn't it, if you don't accept the vaccinations that have been given at source. But I'd like to see, I mean, from my understanding, a lot of these vaccines, it's essentially the same ones, but just being processed in different places. I think we need to have, again, as I was saying earlier, we need clarity around what are the conditions, rather than just saying, we've weighed up all this information and we've decided you're still red. And do you know what? Don't trouble yourselves with the details. This is why. We need a sense of, right, okay, this is what we're judging on. And if it comes down to vaccines, then we need to know which programs are accepted and which aren't. And as I say, with that last review that we had, there was an admission into the fold of a whole load of new countries in terms of their vaccine certification. So I would like to see that happen. And going forward, I'd like to see a situation where more of these are recognized.
Duncan Craig, he's the travel editor for The Times in the UK. Thank you so much for joining us. If you work in tourism, if you have family in the UK, or simply want to go visit family in the UK, how is South Africa still being on the red list affecting you? 021 446 056